Friends, as the first speaker pointed out, the subject of our lecture today is memory, the riddle of science. Riddle is puzzle. Riddle is something difficult, therefore, to understand. And memory is such a riddle, enigma, despair of materialists, as Aitken would say. Add to it, a lot of interest has been aroused in this subject because in the present day, unfortunately, we find that many of the elderly people suffer from partial or total loss of memory. First, there is a difficulty in learning. Then there is difficulty in recalling things. Then they are not even able to do their daily tasks like bathing and brushing teeth and things like that. And then ultimately they are unable to recognize those near and dear ones with whom they have spent their entire lives. Knowing by the name of Alzheimer's or dementia, scientists, doctors, they are still floating in the water. Being able to be that, it's all going to break, yes, it's a brain disorder. So, maybe that the brain cell is an animal. Or that the parts which are connected, different nerve cells or brain cells, they are getting disrupted. Maybe that the chemicals, the neurotransmitters which take the messages from one nerve cell to another, its level is going down, and so on. But it's not definite, in a way, a cause for the remedy that is found for this, which is the cause. Now, of course, we find that memory is directly connected to brain. But you must remember that brain is only an instrument of mind. In mind itself, you have seen last time, it has three aspects, of which the two aspects are mainly of importance. One is the lower mind, the mind which we call maybe as an everyday mind, which is all the time at work. And brain becomes an instrument of that mind. But there is another mind, which we call it the higher mind, but even as spiritual mind. Now, it is very important that we recognize that if we don't have the correct idea, like the psychologists are completely at sea regarding this whole subject of memory, precisely because they don't have the correct understanding, first of all, of the mind, and then what aspect of the mind is using brain as its instrument and so on. So philosophy, of course, is saying, first of all, what is memory? We can simply put it as, it is the ability in man and in animals to reproduce or recall past impressions. Very simple. That when an animal can do certain remembering, it remembers, and some animals are supposed to be having a better memory than some other animals and so on and so on. But we are not concerned with animals now. Broadly, philosophically, we see memory as being of three types. There is remembrance, there is recollection, and there is soul memory or reminiscence. Remembrance and recollection are dependent on three.
The moment you have to make effort, bring your willpower into action and kind of give exercise to your mental muscle, then you say it is a recollection. Now, recollection is a term which shows two things, which we have all experienced. Recollection is something where something acts as a hint. You smell a perfume and immediately you are reminded of a friend who is regularly using that perfume. This is a recollection. Because there is some kind of a hint which comes and that brings the memory. You see a picture, maybe of snowy mountains, and you are reminded of your trip to Darjeeling or maybe Sweden, Switzerland, whatever. Similarly, for remembering, sometimes we require a kind of a cue, some help. Someone says Independence Day. And then we remember, oh yes, that date I was trying to remember was 15th of August. So that is recollection. It needs sometimes some kind of a outside help or a kind of a cue in order to get that memory back. But the third one, and these two memories make use of the brain. But the third one, which is called the soul memory, reminiscence, it is a direct perception. Yes, in order to bring what is seen by our soul into waking consciousness, you require brain. But otherwise, for remembering anything which is a soul memory, brain is not needed. It is a direct perception. We will come to its explanation by and by. So these are the three kinds of memories, and exactly what happens when we say remember, I remember, or I'm remembering. And it's very curious. Till we came to Theosophy, we didn't know what is this memory and how does it work. And HPP says, every time that you say you are remembering or you talk about memory, unconsciously to yourself, with your astral senses, you are looking in the astral light. Now, this is interesting. Just last Sunday we saw, and that brings us to the idea of what is the seat of memory. We are saying it is recalling past impressions, but where are these past impressions? For us, it's all in the brain. We say, oh, it's all stored in the brain, and from brain it comes. No, that's not true. In fact, it's a really very wide field. If we talk about what is the seat of memory, where is it all impressed? My thoughts, my feelings, my desires, my actions, and every event that happens in the world, where is it impressed? And one answer is, it is in the astral light. Last Sunday's lecture, we saw in detail that astral light is a universal register. That astral light is like a huge CCTV camera, or it's a sensitive photographic plate where nothing escapes. Everything gets properly impressed over there. And then remembering is a kind of a process in which each one of us unconsciously, unknowingly, through our astral eye, is looking in the astral light, and then there is a memory which happens through the instrumentality of the brain. So here comes another thing which HPB points out. Brain and brain cells play a very vital role in remembering. But she says the brain cells are the receiver and conveyor. They are not the preservers or retainers of the memory. Yes, there are certain centers in the brain which are, certain cells in the brain which are directly connected with mental activity and memory and so on. But it's not as if everything that happens is there registered in the brain cells. No, it is registered in the astral light. And maybe, as she says, in a way, if you look at the whole body of man, every cell and every atom has a memory of its own. One of our quotations says, suppose you talk about how your stomach is functioning. How does it function? Because there are so many cells forming the stomach, and each cell retains the memory of its own function which it has to perform. Similarly, how your lungs work, how your ears work. Take every organ in the body, and the cells or atoms forming that organ has its own appropriate memory, a whole record of that memory, and that is why they are all doing their function almost automatically. We don't have to be very consciously guiding them to do this or that. As we move, we will see something more also about that. So, in a sense, the seat of memory is everywhere. And in a sense, you can say the seat of memory is this repository called the astral light. And so HPB says that when there is a memory loss, exactly what happens? It is because the brain cells, which are supposed to be the conveyors of these impressions, they have become feeble. They have become to die out. And that's why there is a partial and maybe sometimes a total loss of memory. She gives a very nice example that you have a window which has got a glass, and so long as your glass is clean and clear, you can see everything perfectly which is there outside the window. But if that window develops cracks, many cracks, you know, the things that you see will be all appearing distorted. And if you cover it with a cardboard, you can't see anything. But the moment you remove the cardboard, the moment you repair that glass, again, everything can be seen as before. So, nothing has happened to that register, which is the astral light. Things which are impressed in the astral light are there. It's only the problem is with our brain cells. And because they deteriorate, because they become feeble, there is a loss of memory. But apart from that, we also know people are born with weak memory, people are born with very strong memory. Again, that has something altogether a different thing to do with your karma and your skanda. We have all kinds of skandhas. Skandhas are tendencies of the mind. And we know that there are skandhas which are pertaining to our physical body, and that would include also our brain, and there are also mental skandhas and so on. So, depending upon the kind of brain that we have, maybe it is already having the cells which are weak, so that you have a feeble or not a very strong memory. That could be one reason. But we are told that many times we see, for all of us, that we are all average people with an average sort of memory, a little more or a little less. But there is something like giving it an exercise. Just like you are born with a very weak muscles, you go, you join gym, and then you exercise, and then your muscles become strong. So also the memory, in order that memory becomes strong, you need to give it exercise. See, one of the things which Mr. Judd suggests is the difficulty of remembering the things you read and the like may be due to one or many causes. First, it indicates the need of mental discipline in the way of compelling yourself to serious reading and thinking, even though for a short time each day. This is a very good hint. Not just reading novel or newspaper which you just skim through. Something which is serious reading and thinking, it compels in a way for you to concentrate and reflect. If persisted in, this will gradually change the mental action. Just as one can alter the taste for different sorts of food taken into the body, so also you can change your taste as to what you are going to read. Something similar, of course, has been also hinted at by Robert Crosby, who straight away says that your memory is directly connected with your observation. He calls it notation. And this is a very good point he brings out, that first of all, we don't observe things properly. If your observation is perfect, there'll be a very good image formed in the astral light, and there would be a very easy recall or reproducing of that, and the memory is good then. He gives a very appropriate example. We have to meet someone at 5 o'clock. We just want to know whether it is 5 o'clock or not. So we'll take out watch from the pocket, look at it and put it back again. Just 2 minutes later, someone asks, what is time? Can you tell me what is the time like? You have to again take out watch and see, because he says the first time you didn't see properly. You only saw it was not 5 o'clock. But you didn't see that it was 4:45 or 4:50 or what. So notation, observation, if that is done perfectly, then remembering will also be perfect. This the student would want to connect with what used to be in the earlier times called pathana. Pathana. You go on repeating. See, so many times Gita Shloka are learnt by heart again and again and repeated. Repeated every day. Then that memory is very fixed. It becomes a very good memory. So this again and again impressing something over and over again, the brain. And then actually if the impression is made in the astral light, that makes for a good memory. If you take a little different example, which is explained in theosophy as how habits are formed, the same thing comes into existence, the same idea. If you've been getting up at 7 o'clock and then now somebody says that, okay, now you should be getting up at 6 o'clock, how difficult it is. And that is because the whole body cells have been impressed in one way. There is a internal biological clock which works and impresses the body cells in a way where we get up only at 7. Automatically, your body is prepared to get up and be awake at 7. So if you have to change, you have to wipe away the memory of the previous action and give it a reverse impression, a different impression. The same applies to the habits also. If you have a habit of telling lie or if you have a habit of gossiping, what do? We are working hard to give a reverse impression. Here we are trying to give a different impression. So repeated impressions which are given to your atoms, your cells of the body, and that then is going to bring about change. See this happening when it comes to memory, also in things which are of the nature of mechanical learning. We have often given example of typing, learning a piano, learning dancing. What do? Riyaz karna chahiye. You should practice. Why should you practice? You do it over and over again. And slowly what happens? First you are looking at every key on the typewriter for typing, and then it becomes automatic. You are looking at the matter to be typed, but your fingers properly hit the right key. The same thing happens also while playing piano. And the same thing happens for a dancer whose body movements are absolutely flawless and smooth, because the body cells have been given certain memory, given certain impressions over and over again. So here we are being shown that in a way that memory which has been impressed on the atoms and cells of the body, they retain it. Mr. Grosby goes to the extent of saying that the memory of walking is with us and the memory of talking is with us. And we take it for granted. And he says, it has taken millions of years. It has taken millions of years since we acquired a body like this. And after acquiring the body, it was not an easy thing to really our body to act automatically doing things. We think something and our feet begin to move. We think something and our hands begin to move. We are so used to it. We have never questioned why. But it really occupied millions of years before various parts of the body started acting automatically. And so now the memory of walking and talking is with us. The child begins to learn at the age of 2 or 3, speaking and then talking and everything. It's because the memory is already there. It only has to be invoked a little. Now, regarding this repository, you would say that it is there in every organ, and also there is a partition there. Somewhere HBB says that all those things which are connected with a personal man, eating, drinking, merrymaking, enjoying, fighting, finding faults, all that is connected with the lower mind, that memory is impressed in what she calls as karmic organs. The karmic organs are stomach, spleen and liver mainly. But the memory of spiritual things, the memory of higher things, the seat of that memory is to be found in brain and in the heart. In fact, she says heart is an organ par excellence through which your ego acts or ego expresses itself. So this division is there in man, where different organs are connected with different kinds of memory, the personal memory and something which is spiritual memory. The same is in nature. We find that, we said first that it is the astral light which is a repository and register for our memory, but the higher sort of memory. Where is it? Is it in the astral light? No. There is another layer of matter and consciousness which in theosophy we call as akasha. So if we have, we've heard when Vedas are written, we have been told that they were written by the rishis, and the rishis are called mantra drashta. Why? That means they are seeing the mantras. Now where are they seeing the mantras and then they are writing down? They saw it in akasha. That shows that akasha is that layer of consciousness and matter, a very superior layer of consciousness and matter on which the higher spiritual things are impressed. We remember being told in class that when Buddha speaks, when Buddha gives sermon, will it be impressed somewhere in one of the layers of astral light? No. It would be impressed in one of the layers of akasha. So all those higher spiritual things, higher ideations done by the rishis or someone who is advanced, will all be impressed in the akasha. So there is a tablet of memory connected with the personal man, which is astral light, the tablet of memory connected with the higher ego, and that is supposed to be akasha. Now we may move over from the remembrance, recollection and the general idea of memory to the most important form of memory, which is the reminiscence or the soul memory. Amazing that people, if they reject rebirth and don't believe in it, is simply on this objection that if we have lived before, how is it that we can't remember our past lives? Now, is that so easy to remember the past lives? It has directly to do with reminiscence or soul memory. In that sense, we can say, what is memory? Memory is a record. What is that record? It's a record made from the beginning of the birth till the end, till death. It is as if when we are born, someone is pressing the record button, and then as soon as the child is born, all that is happening in the life, the thoughts and feelings and desires and actions and events, everything is really impressed. And that, in a way, is a record which we know as memory. But that memory is the only memory that is accessible to us in this life. And HPB says, with new birth, there is a new body, new brain, and a new record is created. If there is a new brain, how will this brain know about anything that was recorded and participated in by the brain of the previous personality? It will not know anything. So it's simple that we are not the way in which we are not going to have the memory of the past lives. Also, when we say ordinary memory, physical memory, it's more like the events which happen. You know, one by one by one, you say this happened, that happened, you are narrating an accident. You just give step by step a kind of a view of the whole thing. But the soul memory, reminiscence, it's an experience. It is to do with your feelings and consciousness. So both of these things are preserved in our higher ego or the reincarnating ego. It's very interesting that besides the astral light, our ego also, when we say that when we die, what happens? There is a review taking place. And in that review, there is a panoramic view of all that happened from your birth till the death. We are looking at it because we are in company with our higher or spiritual nature. We have become quasi-omniscient. And right from that moment of birth till death, minutest events are going through, as it were, the mind's eye. for a moment, let us turn to that before we come to this other aspect which we have to see. And while that review is happening, sometimes it can happen that if the person is revived, he is able to recall something which happened 20, 30 years back. This is what HPB calls as memory in dying. 2-3 examples are given by her. The person suffering from, say, TB, consumption, and he's dead. He's been given 2 injections of 1 gram of ether, and he's revived for few moments. And when he's revived, because that review must have been going on, he simply gets up and says something in Flemish language. Nobody understands. He's given a pen and paper. He writes down in Flemish language and dies. It is interpreted later on. And it is found that he has written that 20 years back, I had taken 15 francs, like 15 rupees from an Indian person or 15 francs from a French person. And I have forgotten to return them back to him. Now, HPB says that first he remembers what happened 20 years back. Two, most amazing. This man, they knew, had never learned to speak Flemish. He had only heard people speak Flemish, and that too when he was a very young boy. But the memory is there with the ego. And therefore he was able to write and speak in Flemish language. This is soul memory in one sense. Now that soul memory that we are speaking about, what is it really like? And so we have to go back to this moment where something happens. Not only is there a panoramic view of the life which has ended, but what is it that the soul takes with it from a given personality? We are all aware that it takes from the given personality all the spiritual experiences, all the spiritual good things. Now we have done this so many times that we know what the soul takes from the personality are spiritually good things. Not ordinary charity which is made, but when your heart went out to someone. There is love, there is altruistic deeds. The time you spent in, so to speak, overcoming your lower tendencies, overcoming your anger, overcoming your jealousy and all that. All of that, plus the time you spend in understanding metaphysical things, abstractions, all that is gathered by the ego. But along with that, there is also a memory of certain major events of life, which HPB writes in the Key to Theosophy, are stored as a kind of spiritual formulae. It's not like there is a kind of a record and pictures, but in a very intricate and abstract form, even the memory of certain major things and happenings is there in the ego. Otherwise, how is it that Buddha, when he becomes Samma Sambodhi, he remembers all his past lives? And he says, in certain life I was a king, in certain life I was merchant, in certain life I was an elephant, in certain life I was a bird and what not. So this is again a very queer thing. The memory, which is the soul memory. Now the question then arises, how do we access? Because to us it is not available. And sometimes we say, oh, it's a very merciful nature that we can't see our past lives. And yet there are instances where people remember and are able to have a glimpse of something in the past. So what is it and how does it happen? Well, the first thing could be that there is something like dream. And from and through the dreams, we are able to get the memory of the past. And here, of course, we are now getting into a very different kind of realm. We go to sleep, we pass through dream stage, we go into sushupti. And that's where our soul or our ego becomes completely free from all these kind of shackles of our physical body, our personality, our lower mind. Everybody is asleep. So the ego is completely free to be on its own plane, and there it is able to see past, present and future. And you will recall, there are prophetic dreams, there are warning dreams which have to do with what is going to happen in the future. And then there are also what we call as retrospective dreams, which has to do with the past. Now it's all then the question of being able to bring back the memory of those dreams to the waking consciousness. That is when we can say, yes, I am having that soul memory or reminiscence, because I am able to get back what the soul or ego has been able to see in that Sushupti. It is then going to come as a dream, and that dream is going to be impressed on my brain mind. That is where the problem lies. Not having reminiscence, because as HPB says, you all go through all these stages every day. Every day we touch Sushupti and we come back. None the wiser, as Vadiaji also says, none the wiser, none the better. Because we don't bring back that memory. What is the culprit? Who is the culprit? It's the brain. In one of the old issues of the Theosophy magazine, it's very beautifully expressed that your brain, it acts like a palimpsest, a very novel word in a way, that palimpsest is the document which is written over twice. As school children, we have done that. We used to write in pencil, then take eraser and painfully erase it. And yet, if you have put a lot of pressure, the impressions of the previous writing is there, and then you write over it, you yourself can't read it clearly. This is what happens with our brain. Brain is an organ or instrument of waking consciousness. How much is getting impressed of all the things which we see and talk and do in the waking life is filled with those impressions. And now we suddenly want that same brain should also bring the memory of all that is experienced during Sushupti, and it has come or conveyed as a dream. How can we? Therefore, that article suggests that we need to work and make our brain porous and receptive. So, there are three kinds of stages are mentioned. It could be a kind of a cloudy state where all images are distorted. When we wake up, we say in bits and pieces, moda matha vagarnu sapnu. That is what we say. It has no connection whatsoever. Or it becomes a very shining plate kind of a brain where temporarily there is a kind of remembrance, and before you try to catch it, it's gone. As you wake up, it's kind of a polished surface. Polished surface will give you a pretty good idea of the image, but it vanishes. It has to become like a sensitive photographic plate. Once that the impression is made, it will remain for a very long time. When the brain is trained in that direction, which requires pure thinking, pure desires, pure emotions, regularly sitting down for meditation, and as Mr. Judd says, taking up books and reading which require concentration and reflection. This training of the brain mind is necessary. Then, of course, we can hope to have this kind of bringing back the memory of dreams. And one of those dreams are retrospective dreams. Now and then, we have example, and the only example which HPB has given is about that King Frederick III. He was really the king of Prussia. And we are told that while he was going, traveling from Germany to Prussia, on the way in the train, he has dream. And in that, he's shown his past. And there he sees that in his past, he was King Clovis I. And as King Clovis I, he was a ruthless king. And there is a prophetess, an old lady having powers of knowing future and past and so on. She is being asked by him, you tell me where is this treasure hidden? And the prophetess knows that he's been a ruthless guy and he's not going to make any good use of all this money and treasure. So he says, I refuse to tell you. And also she says that you have not really led your life properly and I can see your past also and you will suffer in future. So he gets very angry and he throws a spear which pierces her neck. And so in this life he's suffering from throat cancer. And in that dream he's made to see, make connections that all along in the past lives he has fought battles, killed people. It's like a ego trying to communicate and saying, turn the corner, whatever it is. And then of course he lives only for 99 days and he dies. This is a retrospective dream. But the past is shown. HPV calls, it has written it in what she calls as karmic vision. So this is one way in which probably sometimes because of the illness, because of certain kind of disease, as we said, it is consumption, where your physical body gets paralyzed, then that inner nature is able to convey something to you. That is where you can have that soul memory trickling through and coming to your waking consciousness. But apart from that, we also hear instances of children. Some of them, they remember their past lives. And we wonder, how is that possible? Why not all children? Here again, definite answer has been given by HPB. Somewhere in Isis Unveiled, she says that our higher mind makes connection with the body only after the age of 7 or at the age of 7. Till then, it is a lower mind which is working in the child. And that is why we see that some children are based on their past karma. As Mr. Judge says, the irresponsible years of childhood, they are governed by past karma. Whatever was the past karma is working itself out. Some children are very obedient and nice. Some children are extremely unruly. Some children simply like to hurt other children. And they just can't sit still for a moment. And all kinds of children are there. But it's past karma and there is no guidance coming from his higher nature. Because the higher nature has not yet made connection. And that's why the idea is that if this child, any of the child, dies before the age of 7, what happens? Because the higher has not made connection, the life which was lived might be good, but it is not a spiritual life. It is not a life led under the guidance of your divine nature. So there is nothing in that life which can be taken to Devahan. It can be assimilated, reflected upon. And that is why mostly these children are born very quickly after death. Sometimes maybe to the same parent and to maybe to some other parent in a different nation. But quickly, the important point is, many times it is born with the same astral body. Now, we said that what is a seat of memory? And this also is one of the major seat of memory. That is the astral body in man. If you go to one of her articles in Raja Yoga or Occultism, and the way she has described, it becomes clear. She does talk about three kinds of astral bodies, but mainly she's saying there is that body which we call Kama, Mayavi Rupa or by many other names. Everything good, bad and indifferent is first impressed in that astral body, call it by any name. And then at the time of death, like the grain and chaff are separated, a portion which is completely to do with the personal man, or to do with all that is supposed to be, say, lower tendencies, anger, jealousy, or negative actions, all that becomes part of Kamarupa shell, ghost. But all those are, which are higher things, these get impressed in and carried by the ego, assimilated by the ego. But till that happens, that astral body is having good, bad and indifferent of that life. Now if the child is born again quickly and with the same astral body, there is a chance that all these impressions may kind of channel themselves through the brain consciousness. And then that child is able to remember, oh, my parents were so and so, I was born in this place, and then I did this, I did that, and then it is verified, it turns out to be true. This is one possibility. Not that it happens always, but sometimes it happens, and that is how the child is able to remember. Another possibility is about people being sensitives. We have seen last Sunday only, psychically sensitive people. Either through training or otherwise, they have made a kind of attunement with the astral light, and they can see and look into the astral. Astral, as we said, is a repository of all that you do. So in one sense, a complete record of our life is there in the astral. Now a psychically sensitive person can pick it up from the astral. But as it is pointed out in our literature, that is highly unreliable. You have to be a trained psychic in order to see the record of your own life. It can happen that this sensitive person is looking at someone else's life record and saying, I did this and I was so and so. So it's like reading from a book which you never wrote. So it is not reliable. Of course, you have lots of people coming forward doing research of these people remembering their past lives. How much they can be relied on is a question mark. Of course, there is something like past life regression, and even that is questionable, where they try to bring memory of the past lives. And then we have heard about people not being too honest, and the regressor himself can implant an idea while the person is regressed through hypnotism, and he says, yes, this happened and that happened, which may not have been. So, all in all, what would we say about the soul memory? The only thing that is in our hands is to make this brain mind porous, receptive, spiritual in nature. And that can happen when we are able to, or we have made it a habit to listen to the inner voice. You've not built that pathway, which is called antahkarna. Is that antahkarna so spotless? Is that antahkarna in that condition where constantly the higher nature is telling something and constantly we are receiving it? Not really. Now and then we are receptive to the voice of the higher nature. Now and then we become receptive to the inner voice. Now and then we may have a kind of intuitive feeling. So if that increases, and also as we progress, it is said that as a chela, you come to a very high stage when you are taught what is called discernment of phala. You are able to see that what I am suffering or what I am enjoying or what I am going through now is because of what I did in certain life, and that was the cause for which I am enjoying or suffering. It's not given to us, but it is given to someone who is spiritually advanced. So that is a stage which will come in our spiritual journey. It's not something to be acquired like some kind of a gift or some easy method. So the soul memory or reminiscence requires a kind of a inner purification, and there is no shortcut to that. And the question may arise, what are you going to do knowing what happened in the past? And as they always say, that as it is, our present life is having enough trouble and enough muddles. We are busy settling scores with people. She did this, he did that. I have yet to tell him that, and all those things. Now add to it remembering someone did something in the past, and to also carry that baggage with you would be too complicated and unnecessary. It will kind of halt our progress in this life. And that is why this whole thing about going back to the past, the memory of the past, is not something which we are asked to carry. In her pamphlet on the New Year's resolution, this is exactly what HPB is saying. At the year's end, like you do at the day's end, your self-examination, do at the year end a kind of examination of the year that has passed. Throw a lion's glance, do a sihavalokan. See what all happened, good, bad and indifferent. Find out who was at fault. What is the lesson to be learnt? Extract the lesson, but do not carry the emotional experience. The emotional experience, if you carry, then you are doomed. You will get entangled. You like to go back to it. If it is pleasant, you relive it. If it is painful, also you relive and start analyze and try to show that I was not at fault. It was the other person. It's not worthwhile. And that's exactly what all the time we are doing with what little we are able to remember of the past. There is the last quotation which is talking about fantasy. Fantasy is remembering the past. You are doing something with concentration, but the moment that work is over, what happens? Immediately the memory of the past begins to troop down. The conversation we had with someone, the work we had done,